everyone, for another episode of our CX podcast. Appreciate you joining today. Paul, we've got, I think, a really interesting topic to discuss, and that is customer-centric cultures. We had mentioned last, I think it was actually two episodes ago, around CX governance, this idea that starting with governance to help force the change until the point where culture is caught up and ready to take over. So this idea of customer-centric culture. So I wanted to explore that today, and in terms of how we look at it at West Monroe Partners, and in terms of the different facets of a culture. So with that said, let's just start off with, what is a customer-centric culture, and why is it important for an organization to achieve its CX vision?
Well, I'll start with why it's important. There's the old adage out there, which is that culture eats strategy for lunch. Culture is how people across the organization make decisions and what they do on a regular basis. I define culture, actually many folks define culture, I borrowed it from other folks, as the beliefs and behavioral norms of people, what people believe and what they do on a regular basis. And if people are constantly making decisions and believe that the right things that they're supposed to be doing are, you know, in the service of the company, in the service of getting click-through rates or cutting costs, you know, they're not focused on the customer. If it's about creating better, you know, the best products and you know, more, the most bells and whistles, again, it's not necessarily at the service of the customer. So, you know, a customer-centric culture, you know, ultimately you can't deliver customer experience without the majority of your employees thinking and making decisions and acting in the best interests of customers. And so, you know, ultimately it's, you know, you can get rid of some of the low-hanging fruit and things that annoy customers, but you'll never really be able to excel at delivering great customer experiences unless you've got, you know, your employees on board and constantly thinking about making decisions on behalf of the customer.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit then about how governance and culture, as I mentioned in the opening, how they kind of play off each other. And there's this shift, right, in terms of the focus from starting with governance to kind of help bring along the culture, and then culture ultimately takes over. Talk a little bit about that interplay between the two.
Yeah, so I think early on in a customer in a company's transformation voyage, if you will, mm-hmm. A company is going along and they're doing a certain set of things, and then suddenly we have a shift and we're going to change. Really, that change then becomes a lot of mediation of conflicts between different groups. Look, we were doing one thing, and now someone's got to tell me I've got to do something else. And maybe it has to change my metrics, and maybe it has to change the way that my performance is evaluated. Mm-hmm. To me, those are all things that a governing body needs to do early on to really start shifting from we were doing something one way to we're doing something else. We're going to start spending our money in different ways. That's a governing function. I can talk about culture, and I can give people training, and I can communicate, and I can do all of these things that talk about training, but if my core performance measures, the way I spend money in an organization, how I reward people more broadly across the organization don't change, then you won't get culture change. So governance really starts out the shift and tends to be more heavy-handed and holding people accountable to a new way of doing things. People are creatures of habit. Mm-hmm. Hold people accountable for that. And then as the shift happens, more and more the belief systems start changing. Oh, yeah, we actually are doing something different. It's okay for me to do things differently than I did before. And along with that, then their behavioral norms change. And as the culture comes up, gets stronger and more focused, then you have less need of governance and holding people accountable because they're holding each other accountable.
Right. Yeah. So how does a customer-centric culture impact the way an organization starts to define job roles or expectations, and ultimately, you know, kind of thinking through the almost like the life cycle, and you know, people talk about employee experience, right? The idea of when you bring in an employee and walk them through, how does CX kind of start impacting all this? And let's start with how organizations start to define the job and the roles and expectations for employees.
Yeah, MX is a great example. Years ago in their contact center, they really decided to make a transformation around how they were interacting with their customers. They literally wanted to hug customers. They saw the ability to talk with a customer as an opportunity, not a cost center, but an opportunity to get to know, to build a relationship, and ultimately to sell more products to them. They rethought certain things. It was really not about getting off the phone as fast as you could. It was about listening and listening to customers, listening between the words. What was the intent? What was someone trying to do? And then really trying to help them out. Well, that changed a lot of the operational metrics in the contact center, first and foremost. It also required a whole new set of skills. And in fact, American Express stopped hiring folks with contact center experience and really went outside the box looking for new folks. It went to retirement homes and hospice places and daycare centers. It was looking for people who had a natural sense of empathy. Mm-hmm. Because they wanted people to listen to customers and have that empathy and understand what the customer was doing and really try to help them. So it really starts changing. You know, when you start saying, hey, I want to interact with customers in a different sort of way, mm-hmm. It starts redefining the roles. There are implications on the contact center for, you know, how much money I'm spending and staffing for that contact center. It changes those metrics around. And again, early on, it has to be about the governance to make those choices. Hey, we're going to spend a little bit more on the contact center because we think there's an ROI on that by treating customers better. But then again, as you start changing, you shift your recruiting, you start shifting those metrics, then the kind of piece can take over.
Yeah. So let's then talk a little bit about, you know, if it starts changing the way that they recruit, the way that they hire. So you looked at different skill sets. Is it the ways in which not just the people that you're looking at, but the processes in which you actually validate, you know, in terms of interviewing and hiring practices, that changes as well?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, it's funny. You can often see companies who purport to be great, want to put customer experience as one of their strategic objectives. And then you look at their recruiting materials, their job descriptions. Doesn't say anything about customer experience, right? So there's very, very simple things early on working with your HR department. Build your customer experience vision into the job descriptions, into the mission, into your, you know, all of those kinds of things. Where do you go recruit people and how do you recruit people? In the American Express example, they really changed where and how they recruited. The selection criteria you've got, you know, do people have a natural empathy? Are they talking about customers? Do they ask about it, right? Those all become areas, you know, and there may be very specific skills. You know, there are companies like Ford and Samsung, Intel, who have hired hundreds of ethnographers, right? They're building up a capability to go out in the marketplace into consumers or customers' natural environments and understand what they're doing and how they're changing. So there may be skills that I may be and capabilities that I may be building to try to drive customer experience forward. So yeah, there's a piece of that culture change, which starts with who am I bringing into the door to begin with?
Mm-hmm. So then once we get them in the door, how do we continue to, and it's interesting, right? There's the net new employee to our organization once we've made the change or as we're making the change. Versus the organization itself and how that's changing, right? So let's talk a little bit then about how do we, as we're changing to a customer-centric culture, how does that really change the way that we acculturate or assimilate those individuals?
Yeah, so there's a combination of assimilation, but you know, companies like you know, Coca-Cola or you know, a Ford have got hundreds of thousands potentially of employees or tens of thousands of employees. And so how do you start changing those folks around? And really that, you know, I think some of the levers you start looking at are in how you communicate out to individuals, how you, you know, the training that you're putting in place. I think some of the informal communications and trainings through rituals and routines. What's up on the walls? You know, what do you, who are your heroes? What stories do you tell across the organization? All of those things become really, really important. Every company has them. And if you walk around the halls of a company, it's just fascinating because those are clues into what the culture of an organization looks like. I love that because in every company that we ever work with, when we're trying to make a shift, there's stuff going on already. It's really about not doing something net new. It's about taking what you're already doing and shifting that and giving it a different focus and a different emphasis. So we look at everything from communication plans to, you know, again, things that are on the wall, to the rituals and routines, to the stories. You know, all of that becomes the beginning, the beginnings of we are going to, you know, start making a shift. I love to see things like customer rooms. You know, there are immersion practices you can put and bring people in to actually physically show them what it feels like to be the customer experience. So lots of again, lots of things that you can do, but really hitting on all of the cylinders of stuff that companies do already today.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's interesting. We were talking a few weeks back about from a governance standpoint, there are different modes in which we can actually execute this. And that's, you know, from a governance standpoint, when we talked a few weeks back, we always talked about you got to find activities that already seem to have worked, right? Or do something different where you know something hasn't worked in the past. So being able to find those different modes, I would ask you, what are some of the best ways to do it? But for every organization, it's probably different, right?
Yeah, and I tend to, I tend to when I work with customer experience leaders, have them reflect on large changes that have happened in the company in the past, you know, or maybe in the recent past, or that are going on right now. And what, when has change worked and when has not, when has it failed? You know, what are some of the kind of internal success criteria? You know, and really latch onto it. We talked before about another consultant out there, Gene Bliss, talks about a power core within a company. I think that's a really powerful concept, is where does the power really sit and who has the most influence on the company? How do you speak their language? So much of culture is embedded in the language and the words that we use. Well, if there's a power core, how do I translate customer experience jargon into the words and the meaning and the importance that, you know, the power core has? How do I get build allies and supporters, you know, who can be a little bit of the Johnny Appleseed, you know, because when it comes from the power core and those and the words that they use to the people, you know, that can shift a lot too. There's a lot with leadership, you know, that becomes very important. You know, and one place I didn't really talk about was rewards and recognition. That's kind of the third, you know, you bring them in, you acculturate them, and then you reward and recognize them. There's a lot of good literature in the behavioral economics that sometimes the informal recognition is more important than monetary rewards. And so you see a lot, again, every company has got some kind of recognition program. They've got incentive bonus programs. They've got a leadership training program. People get rewarded in how they climb up in the company. All of those things can be adapted. Again, it's not net new. It's how do I adapt that stuff to focus in on, hey, we're going to recognize people who have not just, I mean, I look at West Monroe, right? We have ring the bell. Every week we're doing ring the bells around how we bring in business. Wouldn't it be great in every company, and a lot of companies have those kinds of things on either the sales side or the heroic save, Yep. What about just delivering great customer experiences? I went above and beyond in some way that I know is a driver of customer experience,
right?
And recognize those on a regular basis, right? Very, very, very powerful. I think it was Enterprise Rent-A-Car for years. Every manager had to have worked on the line and hit in certain customer experience thresholds, customer satisfaction or customer advocacy types of thresholds to be actually promoted, right? So it's I live and breathe customer experience, and I don't get promoted unless I've delivered on it. So some really powerful things from that, which I think completes a good piece of the loop of the levers that I typically look at it at changing culture.
Yeah. I think the recognition piece I think is so critical, because that's the way that you reinforce it, right, with the employees. You can, there's always, you know, the carrot versus the stick. And next week, we hope to be joined by one of our change management colleagues here at West Monroe and talk about the role of change management as part of these transformations. But, you know, there's always the human nature of what's in it for me when we do this change. And so I think being able to show that and highlight, and like you said, through the lens of what we're trying to accomplish through customer experience. I think the other point is to the rewards and recognitions, that maybe you could talk a little bit about the maturity of that, right? We've talked about there's a maturity curve for all of our foundational capabilities, and it's no different here. Kind of where you can start to ultimately where you get to. So maybe you could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think probably the biggest mistake I see companies make is focus too much on the culture up front without knowing what am I trying to change the culture to. So we can communicate a lot about, hey, customer experience is important and so forth. What do people do? Well, until I've laid a good foundation, I've got a good voice of the customer program to know what customers are thinking and what drives experience up or down. And until I've got a really good strategic vision of how, you know, what kind of experience am I trying to deliver that's, you know, based in good research about what our customers want and what drives value to them. Some of the culture stuff is, you know, I may want to start on freezing and just look at some of the low hanging fruit of where do we really just annoy customers and, you know, get in our own way at delivering customer experience. So I would say, you know, early on, I probably want to focus much more on the strategy, listening capabilities and some of the governing functions to start getting almost a flywheel of, all right, we're starting to improve the experience. I'm starting to understand what drives it. And then I probably start then building more of that communications out. Now we know what operationally you need to do. I may have mapped some key journeys and understand the operations underneath it and looked at customer experience metrics as well as the operational metrics. Now I know how to tell an entire group how to do things differently that actually drives customer experience forward. Now I can ramp up training. I can ramp up, you know, I can start changing some of the rewards and recognition. I can start really communicating out and recognizing people that are making a difference. So again, I think there's a ramp up. I think the emphasis, you know, for every customer experience leader, I'd almost have, you know, quarter by quarter, year over year, what's my communication plan? Who do I need to communicate to? What am I communicating this quarter about the changes that we're making or the changes, you know, things that you can do to impact it? Mm-hmm. You know, and I think pulling out is super, super important. You can recognize a lot of people and a lot of people for doing, you know, 1,000 things impact the customer experience, but there are usually only a few drivers of the customer experience. Mm-hmm. And so I think it becomes really, really almost strategic to understand what drives customer experience and what behavior is it that we really want to enforce that, look, I can bring you chocolate chip cookies as a consumer. You know, we've talked about white chips and blue chips in poker, $1 and $25. A lot of people can do a lot of small things that really don't add up to a lot. How do I get people focused on the blue chip moments and doing the things that really drive value to consumers as opposed to, you know, baking chocolate chip cookies for them? And of course, that may be appropriate at the right place and the right time, but really, where's the value?
Yeah, and then being able to tie what do we need to do to change for our employees to be able to execute on that, right? So that's where you're talking about ramping up training opportunities or rewarding based on specific skill set or experience that they can provide.
Yeah, you know, there is another place you had. Yeah, I realized I didn't quite talk about it, but you had alluded to employee experience and customer experience. And sometimes it can be really, really powerful to start at the employee experience. Mm-hmm. You know, I love nothing more to go into a contact center and say, you guys have had to deal with all of the crap that, the organization has given you. I've seen a couple of organizations start with those frontline staff and say, what are the 10 worst policies that get in the way of delivering a customer experience from your mm-hmm. perspective? They're in touch with it a lot. You can empower those people. You can engage them a lot. And there's a lot for them to kind of be able to they often know what the low hanging fruit for an organization is to fix it. You can engage them right away. And, invariably, whenever I bring contact center folks or field folks from the field who are interacting with customers into rooms to talk about the experience and what could we do better, it is a very cathartic kind of experience for them. And you start engaging them, and that can be really, really powerful as well. Plus give you a whole set of, portfolio projects that, start working and improving it.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. So if we're making all these changes, right, we're trying to change the culture, shift the culture. How do we know? I don't want to say how do we know when we're done, because frankly, you're never done. Right. But how do you know that you've actually really started to make the shift? How do you measure culture?
Yeah, so there's actually some really great tools out there. From a Denison survey to Gallup, any number of instruments that look at culture and culture alignment. And what I found really intriguing from those, when you look at them, they kind of go through a broad spectrum of, is your strategy articulated in a way that your employees understand what it is? Mm-hmm. And so if you're customer centric and that's part of your strategic intent, are you communicating, is your leadership walking the walk? All the way through, am I empowered to deliver things relative to that strategy? Do I have the tools? Do I feel like my colleagues have my back? So I think those tools are really, really interesting. Again, it starts with strategy, though. Have you articulated a strategy that's customer-centric? If you haven't done that, those culture alignment tools, don't really make. They're great for whatever it is that your strategic intent is, but I really like them when you come in and you've got a very clear sense of, I want to be customer centric first. Using some of those culture alignment tools can be really, really powerful for just saying, is it working or am I all over the map? I'm saying one thing, but I'm doing something else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So we've obviously talked about the value and why it's important for this shift as a customer-centric culture to support CX efforts. Where have you seen the lack of that culture change actually doom CX efforts? Any good examples based on your experience?
Yeah, lots of them. I mean, cable companies have been working at this for a while.
And I think we all remember the Comcast the Comcast service rep that, again, if it were a more customer-centric culture, they probably wouldn't press so hard or be forced to, based on that they're incentivized on.
And quite frankly, the airlines have been struggling lately, and many of them have customer experience. United for sure has had a customer experience effort going for a while. So I actually would have to say that there's as much about the culture change. It starts at the leadership and the executive team, and that's where the seed of your culture either starts or fails. Mm-hmm. And so as many of those doomed efforts come from a lack of true executive buy-in, or what I would call an executive cheerleader, someone who's saying rah, 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 yes, customer experience, of course, but then doesn't walk the walk, isn't out actually talking to customers, isn't hasn't changed the way that the company allocates resources. Says one thing, but then when you read the 10-Ks and the reports out to investors, customers don't play any part of that, and there's no sense of tying customer satisfaction or customer experience to financial metrics. You know, the companies that do really well do that. They're really great. You know, look at those companies like a Costco, like a JetBlue, like an Amazon, and every single financial statement talks about how important the customer experience is in driving cost savings, driving revenues, driving loyalty, driving the ability to go into new markets. So again, I think, we focus on sometimes on the culture change, but it all starts with your leadership in the company because they set the stage for culture.
Awesome. All right. Well, like I mentioned, next week, we're going to bring one of our change management folks in to talk about how do we help in the name, right? How do we start managing this change internally as we shift, right? If we have our strategic vision, how do we start riding the ship? So we'll be joined by Bill Kirst, one of our OCM SMEs. So I thought a good way to wrap up this week, Paul, would be kind of going back to our CX tool of the week and this idea around recognition, right? So there are a lot of recognition tools out there. Like you said, it not necessarily has to be formal compensation, but we all like gamification and how we can bring that in. How do we promote our employees that are really bringing CX to life? What are some tools out there to help us do that?
Yeah, so there's a lot of do-it-yourself. Again, most companies have got some form of recognition, kudos, peer-to-peer rewards mechanisms. It could be, I see sales teams always get trips to someplace. I see customer experience leaders sometimes. I think it was Fidelity. Set up a champions or a change agent program and took all of those folks to the Disney Institute for a day. Rather than go to a golf course, they went to Disney Institute and tapped into people's natural passion to to deliver great customer experiences. So at some level, again, these things exist and there's a lot of do-it-yourself. There's also some really pretty interesting tools that are out there. Badgeville, for example, or Merit's Motivation Solutions have got rewards and recognition types of programs that, can run the gamut from some gamification types of things to peer-to-peer recognition to social media and connecting people, around what, it's really ways for peers to recognize one another, ways for managers to recognize, bubbling that up. So, in a company meeting, people could be recognized, tying into swag. There is an element of, compensation, but I do like swag. And if I'm proud of my company and I stand for the brand, I feel like our company has purpose and we're doing things, those types of things can be really powerful as well.
Yeah. That's great. All right. We'll end our discussion there for this week. I think this was a really nice deep dive introduction to culture. There's a lot more we can talk about. I know I actually had a couple ideas percolate in my head as we were going. So, Paul, as always, thanks for joining. And everyone listening, thank you. Thank you for joining. Hopefully you got some good information. And I'm excited about our conversation next week with Bill.
Take care.
All right. Take care. Bye.
Bye.